Hello and welcome to our next episode of the podcast Medicine 3.0. As you may recognize, today's podcast will be in English, but we will include German subtitles below so that you can follow the conversation in German as well. Today, as our guest, we have a physical therapist from India, clinic owner Sagar Naik. Sagar, would you like to tell us a few words about yourself? How was your journey within the field of physical therapy? And yeah, how did you came here to join the podcast?
Yeah, thank you so much, Ivan, for inviting me. And basically, I started my bachelor's of physiotherapy in India. So I started in 2007 and I completed my bachelor's in 2007. And then went to US for my master's. I was at University of Florida. It is one of the leading public universities in US. And I got my training in motor control and learning. So I was working mainly with stroke patients, which are mainly affected with paralysis. And I got my master's. Along with that, I was a research assistant at the VA hospital, Veterans Hospital in US, also at the Department of Physical Therapy of University of Florida as well. So I gained almost about 5 years training in advanced equipments and the concepts of training stroke patients. That was my key segment when I was in US. Then after 5 years, so in 2012, I came back to India because I wanted to serve India rather than stay outside. So we started a clinic, and then we also started developing our own setup, that is Asian Physiotherapy and Research Institute, which is like almost a hospital of for physiotherapy in India. So that is where we are, and almost it's 12 to 15 years I am practicing in India as a physical therapist. And my main genre is neurological rehab, which includes paralysis, stroke patients, head injuries, spinal cord injuries, and many degenerative diseases like Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis and different genre of neurological problems.
So neurology is a big part of physical therapy, but as we know, you have many areas in physical therapy that you can look into: orthopedic, pediatric, etc. Areas. What inspired you to actually go into neurology? Why do you find this field specifically exciting?
The major factor is like there is no boundaries. And there is no right or wrong segments in neurological rehab. You can extend your horizons of practice as a physical therapist. You can innovate your line of practice. There are concepts. You take Bobath, or you take about brainstorm approaches, or some constraint-induced movement therapy. But those are all approaches. But when you talk about treating a patient, you need to have a holistic approach of treating every with all the concepts together and give a result to the patient. So I think that gave me a huge passion to work for this population. And most of the time, it's not that once you treated the patient a month or 2 months, the patient is all okay. There would be a segment where we need to teach them, where they continuously follow your instructions to be independent and functional in their activities of daily living. So at times we have seen patients where they have never visited a mall. And then once you start working with them, and then they out of blue, when we meet them and they tell us that, okay, I visited a mall just because you showed us the way with the disability also, how I can be the part of the society. And that gives a lot of joy, and that keeps us motivating to treat more and more neurological patients.
So as you have mentioned, neurology is a very wide area of practice. What are the main conditions that you treat in your clinic? Is it more Parkinson's or MS, or what are the main conditions that you see in your clinic?
Yeah, so in our practice, our focus is more on the 3 to 4 major conditions. One is the stroke, which happens because of the ischemic or hemorrhagic damage happening to your brain. which leads to half side of the paralysis. So basically half part of my body, maybe right or maybe left, upper limb and lower limb both are involved. That kind of cases we'll see a lot. Second is the injury to the spinal cord. That is like my spinal cord, which is going from top to bottom, which might be injured at cervical level. So if it is from here, then the entire body is paralyzed. Then it's at middle thoracic level. Then from this part, this upper part is working, but from here downwards, it's not working. So we work with these kinds of patients. And the another is the lower segment. So the injury happens to the lower spine, and only your both lower limbs are affected. So this is the spinal cord injury patients. Another is the Parkinson's disease, where your dopamine generating cells in the brain, neurons, are affected, which leads to all over movement disorders, like a patient is not able to walk properly. There are frequent falls. Fatigue is a factor. Another segment is multiple sclerosis and GBS, which affects, again, the multiple sclerosis affects your autoimmune. It is like your immune system is affecting your nervous cells, but that is central nervous system is affected. But when we talk about GBS, it affects your peripheral nervous system. So peripheral is like my limbs, both lower limbs, upper limb, nerves are affected, and you get paralysis. So at the end of the day, whatever we talk about, it's more to do with some kind of weakness or the paralysis, whatever term you use, are the major components where we work as a neurological physical therapist.
Mm-hmm. So these are very serious conditions where patients lose the ability to move their limbs, or even ability to speak or think clearly. You have mostly the misconception that after a stroke, there's a very low potential to recover and to gain the life quality back. Where do you see the potential specifically with physical therapy? How far can you help the patients recover?
So for the recovery, there are 3 to 4 factors which are there, and for each condition it differs. So if you talk about brain and the spinal cord, the major segment is the extent of injury, like how much spinal cord is damaged and how much your brain is damaged. These are the two major components which we need to see beforehand once we define the prognosis. But whatever the case is, once it is damaged, that is damaged. This brain and spinal cord neurons are not able to regenerate. So for example, when I ever got a fracture on my elbow or my forearm, once they have stabilized the fracture site, there are new cells which are generated and the fracture get healed by bone formation. But that is not the case when we talk about the brain or the spinal cord. So in that case, what we try to work is to gain and maintain or improve their functionality such that they can be in the society again. So for example, a person comes with a stroke and he is a banker. Then we try to frame the treatment plan such that he is again is able to go to the bank and do his activity of daily living, given the potential of what improvement he can get. That depends on the brain and the initial golden period of 6 to 8 months, where the spontaneous recovery is also happening. The brain is trying to reconnect the cells. That is a factor where physical therapy tries to boost that phase and gain the independency to the patient's population.
So this effect is called neuroplasticity. So basically where the brain relearns the previous movements, but with different areas of the brain. Do you have any examples where you had major success with a patient who maybe couldn't walk and then could restart walking again? Or can you give us some examples?
Yeah, definitely. There are many such examples where we also thought that it was a bit difficult to achieve some kind of mobility in that particular patient. So we had a girl, she was somewhere around 7 to 8 years when she had a fall from 12th floor of a building. So she fell from there and we saw her MRI when she visited us. We saw her MRI and if we see the spinal cord, there was complete cut. There is no spinal cord intact. That was the vision which what we see on the first MRI when we saw the patient. The patient was medically stable, operation was done, the vertebrae were stabilized with the fixation, But the major issue was we didn't saw any connections between the spinal cord. So in that case, it was a few classic case of paraplegia. So from the trunk, the fracture was at L1 level. So from trunk below, both the limbs were zero. But once we started working with this kid, almost we worked for somewhere around 9 months, and the kid was able to run. The kid was able to climb stairs, descend stairs. She was back to school in almost 1.5 years. And that was a major achievement what we also saw in a spinal cord injury patient. So this is the case about a spinal cord injury. Another case is the head injury, which happened with a road traffic accident. Again, a 22-year-old boy fell from a sports bike, and he had an injury on the brain, on the backside of the brain. Again, when you have an injury on the backside of the brain, the issue is with the balance and incoordination. So the patient was not able to sit or stand even. Also, he had problems with swallowing. He was not able to swallow anything. Again, we started working with the case, and almost again in about a year's time, that person was able to balance himself, was able to run again. He started playing cricket again. That is another factor. And almost I saw him like a year back, and he was driving a car as well. So these are the factors where we see the possibility of rehabilitation is very high in the initial phases, if the it has been targeted on initial basis and in a very intensive manner, then you can see very good potentials of recovery. Again, in the both cases, if you see, both the cases were young. So the neuroplasticity, what we have been talking or you have been mentioning, the neuroplasticity is the potential of getting more neuroplastic. Our brain is at a better younger age than the older age. Yeah, older age patients, another case is about hypoxic cerebral palsy. Hypoxic cerebral injury was there. He was 42 or 50, between 42 or 50. I am not able to exactly remember his age. But that person is also now back to his functional activities in about 6 months' time. But again, overall, if we talk about all these cases are below 50, where the neuroplasticity is much more efficient and developing new connections, learning is much more better in these cases rather than little bit in older ages. There are chances where there might be some disability, but yes, you can make them functionally independent.
Mm-hmm. This year earlier, I have visited your clinic, and I've seen that you are trying to implement some very new and interesting concepts in your practice. Can you maybe tell a bit more about the approaches that you use inside of your clinic to help neurological patients?
Basically, what we work mainly on 2 to 3 factors. The first one is the intensive rehab. Intensive rehab, when we talk about, which is not much more prevalent in the other parts of the world. Yeah, they have been telling to do an intensive rehab, but the structure of the rehabilitation setup, which is most on insurance based, they are not able to provide that. But that is the liberty what we have. So our intensive programs are for the stroke or neurological problems like spinal cord. We work for somewhere around 4 to 6 hours of therapy in a day. And that is for like 5 to 6 days in a week. So the number of repetitions what we are able to give is much more higher, which are required. If you read any neuroplasticity concepts, it is required that you do the task repeatedly and in a correct pattern. Then your brain is able to learn that particular task. So that is the first priority and first concept. What Asians does is intensive rehab. That is the first thing. Second is about functional rehab. So the functional task practice is a major component where we are master in there, in that. Where once the patient comes to us, yeah, we are trying to gain their normal recovery. We try to make them as normal as possible as they were before. But parallelly, we start working so that they gain independency depending on the injury, so that in a time of 6 to 8 months, they are able to go back to their society or the function what they were doing. Let's say, for example, we have a case of, as I mentioned before, a person with a head injury, a stroke, which was a banker. So our, on the first day when the patient comes to us, we try to focus on that aspect, what all difficulty he would be facing. He needs to go to public transport to reach the bank. So we start training the person such that he is able to climb the bus or climb an auto rickshaw. In India, auto rickshaw is a major public transport which has been used. So we start training them such that in the process, they learn those functional abilities as well. So these are the major two concepts. And the third is the strength training programs. Again, most of the world in stroke rehab are not convinced to go with the strength programs. They think that it is spasticity increases because of the strength program. But that is not the truth. The spastic muscles are also weaker muscles. So you need to strengthen them. And if you do that, spasticity automatically reduces. So these are the three major components. So we have a full-fledged gym where neurological patients do gymming to gain their functional abilities. So these are the three major factors. One is the intensive rehab. Second is the functional task practice, depending on their requirement. And third is the strength training programs, which we use a lot in our regular neurological practice.
So this is a very holistic concept with which you can get very good success, specifically with the patients who have a neurological diagnosis. But I assume this is not the standard within the Indian healthcare system. Where do you see challenges in implementing such form of treatment and therapy within the Indian healthcare system?
I think there are three levels of problems where to promote this kind of concepts in physical therapy. I think first I would consider as a problem with our own physiotherapy community, where we are not much convinced with this concept of intensive rehabs or repetition-based rehab options. So I think one first factor is if I am not promoting that, or basically my physiotherapy community is not promoting that, then the other part of the society, like the other healthcare professionals or the patient population, how they will be convinced for this particular segment. So I think first factor is the physiotherapy community, we itself. But yeah, I see the change. There are now setups all over India. They are in bits and pieces, but therapy centers are developing where they are trying to give these intensive programs. That is the first factor. Second is, as I mentioned, the other healthcare professions. Because any problem which is happening neurological, the first line of treatment is going to be somewhere else. It's not the PT. They would be diagnosed with the neurologist or a neurosurgeon, or they might be operated by a spine surgeon or somebody. So the awareness among them is one of the factors where they need to give emphasis to the patients that this is the only option, that intensive rehab or intensive physiotherapy or intensive occupational therapy is only a way forward for you once you are medically stable. So that is the second factor, the healthcare profession. And third, definitely, is the patient population themselves. Because many times what happens is patient population is does a lot of wasting of time while trying out different things, like some kind of Ayurvedic treatment or some quack-based treatments, where they lost lot of time is been lost. So, for example, if we talk about stroke patients, the major window time is like 6 to 8 months. So out of that 4 to 5 months they've wasted to get a proper therapy, then that is the issue. So these are the three major factors. But I think all over, if I talk about all these factors are changing in my last 15 years when I started and now where I am right now after 15 years, I think there is a dramatic change in all these segments. And I think it is going to evolve in next 4 to 5 years more.
Within Germany and the German healthcare system, people very heavily rely, well, mostly on passive treatments, on surgery, on medication. So, as you mentioned, the full awareness of the benefits of active, intensive physical therapy and care is coming, but not really there. Do you also see in India a heavy reliance on passive treatments, on medication, and on surgery?
Yes, definitely. I
Is it
think that
so?
is the major factor. I think that is not only in the neurological rehab. I think it is for all the conditions. If we also talk about the orthopedic conditions, in that also, people are more rely on when we talk about our own practice. So basically, I'm a physical therapist. In physical therapy also, they are not more focusing on the exercises, active participation of the patients. They are more relying on the passive modes like stimulations, currents or different modalities where they are just lying, they are not working anything, they are not working out their muscles. Because if you take orthopedics or pediatrics or neurological rehab, most of the factors, physical therapy helps only and only mainly with the active participation of the patients, where patients uses their muscles, then only things can change. Yeah, the concepts are different with neurological and pediatric and the orthopedic rehab. But the major focus is again about movement. Gaining movements is the major component, which is definitely a lacking point. I think that is the truth, not only in Germany, it's in the entire world. Because I've been to trained in US, I have been to Singapore, I have been to Netherlands, Switzerland, and I have been interacting with all these places on the conferences as well. And we see the similar problem, which is evident everywhere.
So it's very common that patients start doing some form of self-treatment exercises on their own. Do you see the benefit in that, or is it more safe to consult a professional and be doing the exercises with them?
I think as we have been talking about neurological rehab, the quality of movement is a prime factor over here. Because once your body is paralyzed, I will take an example of hemiparesis, like yeah, my half side of the body is paralyzed. For example, my left side of the body is paralyzed. Now I'm not able to move my hand, right? So when I give an exercise prescription, said he needs to bend the elbow and reach to your mouth, then the muscle power is not there. There is no connection from my left brain, right brain to my left arm. Then he's not able to do that. If I'm telling the patient, you need to do this, the patient will start with two to three things. First is use the another unaffected hand. So basically, what he would do is like this. So what is happening is what the task was to do this, but he's doing completely passively. So he's not activating any muscle groups. So the chances of gaining any reconnections or development of the connections over here is almost lost. That is the first. Second, if he's having a little bit of movement, so for example, he's able to do a little bit of this, then he would start doing. So what is happening again? Now he's compensating with the trunk. So he's lifting this much, but when he see himself, he has reached this much. But that is not right. The elbow was working only this much, but it's just the trunk which has done the another compensatory work. So this is the another compensation what happens. And at the end, once the patient is 3 to 4 months old, he has learned this pattern. So every time he's able to drink the water, what he would do is he would lift this and then he will drink the water. Because the wrong pattern has been registered in the brain. Similar thing happens with walking as well. So even if I am having a good muscle power, but I have started walking in a wrong pattern just because I was told that you need to walk without any guidance how to walk. That leads to the problems. So most of the time with neurological patients, it has to be a supervised treatment plans so that once you are at home, yeah, I'm saying we need to do an intensive therapy. So it's not always possible that patient would be able to come for 4 to 5 hours for a therapy at a clinic. But at least they need to get 1 or 2 hours of therapy at a clinic where we continuously guide them what is their potential and what are the correct movement patterns so that when they are working at home, they are able to work more precisely and without compensating a lot of movement patterns, which in a longer run would avoid pain issues. Their efficiency would be much better if they are in a very supervised, structured treatment plans. So these are the two major factors where supervised treatment options are much better compared to the normal directly given exercise programs.
Mm-hmm. After a stroke, or specifically patients who have Parkinson's, they also deal with psychological issues, with depression. And as we have mentioned, specifically neurological rehab takes time and effort. How do you deal with setbacks, and how do we keep patients on track so that they complete the program?
In this, I always tell the patients to enjoy and appreciate your small victories. So basically, Rome was not built in a day, right? So you need to enjoy my first step. So for example, once I was having a stroke, I was in a bed, I was not able to move myself. But on the day when I turned to a side by myself with all my efforts, I need to enjoy that. I need to appreciate that I am able to do this now. Most of the time, what we think is, I am not able to walk. Yeah, but that's a journey what we need to achieve. But if I start enhancing or appreciating each and every step what I'm gaining, I'm learning, I'm moving ahead, then that would keep them motivated to move ahead, so that they own that particular potential and they are self-confident that, yeah, if I'm able to do this today, yes, next down the line, I will be able to walk myself, and I will put an effort to keep on working on that particular thing. So for example, Parkinson is a long-term condition. In that cases, what our goal is that patient stays independent as much as possible. And for that, exercise is a major segment. Everybody knows that. So in that, again, we make them aware that, okay, let's see a month, how many times you had fall. So for example, patients tells us that I had a fall for 2 times in a month. Then we start therapy. And after that, a month, 2 months down the line, now we ask them how many times you had a fall. And patient says, no. And then we make them make that correlation. Why you didn't had a fall now? That just because you are exercising regularly and you have avoided this fall. So we give them a task. Now you are not in a rehab. Now you need to do exercises at home because you are in a better stage. Your potential, your balance is much better. So we juggle between a supervised program and a home-based program. So a month they have been with the therapist. Now for 2 to 3 months, they are going to be by themselves. But we make them sure that you need to follow the program such that you keep monitoring your falls. So that keeps them motivated. I'm doing exercise. I'm not falling. I would keep going on. So these are the smaller factors where we try to make a plan such that they feel, as a patient, I feel that things are changing. And that is the part of therapist as well, to show those changes to the patient. Then only patient would be able to motivate themselves and keep going on, because these all are conditions where they need long-term exercise routines.
Mm-hmm. Specifically in neurorehabilitation, I did see that people do group therapy or some form of active group treatment. When I was visiting your clinic, I saw that you have an open room concept for neurorehabilitation. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and tell us a bit more how you approach treating neurological patients?
Yeah, so that the my entire floor is open. So basically, there are two things for that. First is, when you see a person, like in the entire session, we have more than 15-20 patients that have been treated at a time. So if I'm a patient and I am on a wheelchair, but similar patient, for example, the similar kind of injury what I had, is having another patient is there, and he is on a walker, right? So first factor is the motivation, that he had worked and he's able to reach that. So that keeps me motivated that, okay, I also need to put that effort and reach there. It is possible. It's not like that I am alone. If he can do it, why I cannot? So that is the first factor which comes in the play. Second is the, at times people feel that the rehab or the exercises get a little bit of monotonous. So to make a basically a live environment where patients feel that they are participating in something. So we, for example, we have four or five Parkinson patients that are being treated at a time. All are of different categories. That's okay. Then based on their potentials, we make a circle and then we assign a task. For example, throwing and catching a ball. So one person would be throwing a ball. We know the potential or the problems what that patient is having. For example, that patient is more stiff. So he's not able to do this. So our task for that particular patient would be to throw the ball, but overhead. So every time he does that, the trunk extension is being achieved from the therapist's point of view. But for patient, he feels that I am only playing, right? But on the other side, the patient had more issues with freezing, for example. So for that particular patient, what we will try to do is he needs to focus on his gait to catch the ball, because ball can, the person would try to throw exactly or to him, but that, not every time ball will reach directly to him. He or he needs to sway to catch on the left hand side or on the right hand side. So that will improve his balance capabilities. So we designed the task based on those four or five people so that that is more engageful, more competitive, which improves their balance, their problems what they are facing. So that is another major factor where we see at times weekly, once we have a group therapy sessions where we work this way. So these are the two major components where it improves the quality of life, that participation level gets better. We have seen the same task if you are doing to do with the shoulder flexion. But that was much better when we did with a group therapy and with some functional task. So that helps us to motivate the patient and push their limits. They are able to push their limits much more on a higher side. We have seen with hemi patients, there is an incoordination between the upper limb and lower limb. But the patient dances when he is in front of a mirror, right? So we have two or three patients standing in a line and they dance. But we see the difference in their coordination, which is happening during that particular session. And we try to do that only on a session. It's very difficult. So that way, we try to incorporate group sessions and more of a functional activities, which are much more useful for the patients.
Mm-hmm. Nowadays, there's a lot of innovation within the physical therapy realm. For example, the use of virtual reality for gamification of the treatment, where you do certain games which include movement. And it also improves the balance while also playing certain games within the treatment. Where do you see the most potential for innovation through technology within the neurorehabilitation?
Yeah, I think the question we had before has very much application in this particular segment. The group therapy, what we do is similar kind of concept, but that you can do individually when you enroll virtual reality. So we have a setups of virtual reality as well, where a patient is standing on a force platform. There's a plate on the foot and they move and you see the thing which is happening on the screen. So that gives a lot of visual feedback to make the adjustments what patients tries to learn. So basically when the patient is not taking weight, for example, on the left side of the body or the left foot, but once he sees that particular thing, if I am telling the patient, you are not putting weight, but he will tell, I am doing it. But when that thing is translated on the screen and he visualizes himself that, yeah, both the things are different, then it makes the body tries to make the corrections and find the solutions by himself. So virtual reality has a huge potential to improve rehabilitation protocols. But again, at times, what we have seen is the gaming consoles have been developed such a way that rehab is moving, that home therapy concept is still getting better with the rehabilitation options of VR. But I think
it has to be properly structured with the therapist such that proper movement patterns are registered to the patient, and then he follows that particular thing in home rehab perspectives. I think virtual reality is another very good potential to improve the number of repetitions what you do for neurological rehabs. So for example, if I'm able to lift this much, but if I need to do this task for 10 times, 20 times, if I'm just doing this, it would be difficult and monotonous and I might stop doing it. But if I'm playing a reality game, for example, a monkey, and you need to climb a tree and get a banana from that, then I would put that effort. Once I lift the hand, on the screen, monkey would climb the tree and he will lift the banana. So that is an engagement. And I can increase the range of motion as well. So these are the factors where the patient keeps motivated. And we have seen that if I tell the patient to do this 10 times, it's a bit difficult for him. But once we put them on a virtual reality with the markers on the sensors on the body, they complete 100-115 repetitions in a session. So that is a huge potential where virtual reality helps, because with neuroplasticity, we know that it's learning, and learning happens with number of repetitions you do. Just for example, any sports person, how much time they put for that particular sport? They play 4 to 5 hours in a day to get that training or that rhythm to develop. So with the neurological rehab also, we need to push their limits on repetitions to repeatedly do that particular task. And I think virtual reality has a huge potential to boost that without feeling under-motivated that, okay, always I need to do this particular activity. It helps a lot in that particular segment.
We have discussed many things in this podcast today, yet I think that there are also many patients who are listening to this podcast. And Sagar, do you have maybe something that you would like to give your patients as an advice for them to follow?
I think first thing is, as I mentioned before as well, keep working, keep moving, I would say, whatever capabilities you have. If you are on a wheelchair, try to move the wheelchair by yourself for at least a few distance. So for example, if you are moving 100 feet, then on a week or 2 weeks down the line, you need to increase that. So difference, what you are able to achieve. So that is the first thing. And with any neurological patients, you need to focus on the repetitions. So for example, how the new connections are been formed is just with the repetitions. So for example, it has been proven that you need to walk somewhere around 1,000 to 2,000 steps in a therapy session to make a change in your brain or in your spinal cord. So, and if you just evaluate your sessions, you are far below that. You are walking 100 or maybe 200 steps in a session, which is much more lesser. And here comes the innovations, maybe the robots or the body weight support trainings, which help you to improve that particular segment and push your limits. So always enjoy your each and every bit of achievements what you have achieved and keep fighting for it. And third, whatever you have gained with the two factors, try to translate that in your functional capabilities. Then only you will achieve that, okay, I have achieved something and I'm doing some fruitful work in my future.
Thank you so much, Sagar, for your time and your expertise. I hope the patients will take the advice to heart and follow through. And leave a comment if you like the podcast, this format of the podcast. And Sagar, hope to see you again as a guest on the podcast on a different topic here soon. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much again. And thank you all the viewers who might listen to me in future as well on the YouTube channel of Evans. Again, thank you so much for calling me.